This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, so welcome everybody. This is Sarmad, and we're starting our ID and guidelines working group call on 12th or 22nd of December 2016. We have Edmund, Mats, Danish, and Satish on the call. So over to you, Mats.
Thank you. Okay, so what is in the version that we see here? Are all contributions added into it somewhat?
Yes, so there are three changes. One is there was a recommendation which was sent in by Carl. That's the updated version has been added here on page, I guess on this page, doesn't have a number. And then we also have a revised recommendation sent in by Mats, which is also given in section 2.7 here. And then I've added back recommendation 5 from version 3.0. This was suggested by Dennis last time. So that we need to discuss whether we need to keep it or change it and keep it or what we need to do in this case. So back to you, Mike.
Thank you. So let's move up from the top. So this is the first change. It's hard to see it. Can you, is this a PDF or is this, or if you could introduce a page break?
Is it a PDF? Sure, I'll upload it.
Yes,
you can start and I'll do that and upload it.
Okay. So, this is a new recommendation proposed by Edmund. And it says, and this is in the concept of variance. Okay. So,
this was in the context of automatically activating variants. We've not discussed it in past 2 to 3 meetings, but this is the same recommendation. Which was originally proposed.
Yeah. So, Edmund, do you want to comment this? Are you available to speak?
Yeah. I apologize. On my mobile, the text is extremely small, and I don't have the text in front of me. But I think the gist of it is... The idea is to allow for auto activation of variants only under very restrictive cases like Chinese and as in accordance to the JET RFC for other cases the variants should be activated by the registrant more explicitly. That's the, if I recall, that is the suggestion, and we have, I apologize again, I am kind of in transit right now, and but that I think is the gist of the proposal.
I think it's problematic to treat Chinese IDN tables different from other IDN tables, firstly. And secondly, the RFC 3743 is a informational, as far as I remember. Is this really a good idea to to use this as a kind of a standard setting RFC in that way. Yes, Edmund, please.
This has been jumping in. I guess I'm not suggesting to isolate Chinese. I think the overarching idea is that only under circumstances that have been thought through by linguistic communities that this should be used. And the key aspect here is not to disallow it, because this is what variants are for. And that's the key message. If there's any language that gives the impression that we're isolating a particular language, we shouldn't do that. I think it's an overarching statement. That's the original proposal.
Okay. I mean, we could have a recommendation stating that variants may be automatically delegated. I don't think that we should refer to that RFC, though.
I'm okay with that.
Does Dennis and Satish have any meeting on this?
This is Dennis Matz. I agree with removing the reference to the RFC 3743, and mainly because of the scope of the RFC, right? It's clearly in the context of CJK variants, and my concern is that whether can we safely extrapolate the recommendations to other languages. So that would be noise if we present it in this form. So by removing this, I think we capture what we want in terms of how to handle variants across the registries. Thank you.
Yes. As I interpret ICANN, and I'm not talking about the ICANN community, I'm talking about ICANN company, so to say. They prefer that variants are not automatically allocated. So we might have a conflict there, but we'll concede what ICANN says about it. Samad, I'll let you respond. Samad?
Thank you, Mats. Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Thank you, Mats. So I'd like to make a couple of comments. I think one should realize that by automatically activating variants, we are, in a way, giving some additional burden to end users, because they have to obviously, the registrars, they have to manage these automatically activated variants. So that is still fine, or could be fine. But I think in that particular case, I think it will be useful to probably say that instead of a registry just doing this decision in isolation, it really should be supported by the relevant script community, so that when a registry takes up something like that, there is some community support for that particular action, I guess, in a way. Currently, for example, Chinese community has some you know, there are some motivations to do automatic activation. Maybe we can present it in that context, that not leave it to the registry by itself, but say that, you know, where communities require it or ask for it, these may be enabled or something to that effect. Thank you.
Edwin?
Yeah, it's interesting. Thank you. I agree with Samad. Just one particular point. The burden on the registrant is probably a little bit overrated. And we think about it in the terms of NS delegations. If the DNS is not set up, nothing really happens. But the burden on the registrar, that is understood between the registry and registrar agreement. So I think it's a good idea to highlight that in terms of the support of the script community. And I pretty much agree with Samad with the handling. I don't have a problem with that.
This is Matt stepping in before I hand over to Samad. I have a problem with the script community. How is that documented? So what is the script community? I mean, we've had this discussion on vague requirements before. It would be quite vague to say that it must be supported by the script community. Samad. Edmund, please mute.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Sorry. So I would actually, before I go and answer your question, I wanted to make one more comment. And that is, you know, as far as burden on the registrant is concerned, I think one other thing we need to be also careful about is that if these additional activations are especially you know, at a cost, then I think there is some significant implications. So I'm not sure how it's done for Chinese right now. Do these extra variants which are activated are separate cost or included in the original cost? And if we are, suggesting something like this, is it implicit in that suggestion that there will be no extra cost for such variants? Is that something we want to make it more explicit, or is that something which is not relevant? So that's one thing which I wanted to bring up. As far as the second point is concerned, I think Edmund also wants to probably comment on that, but I guess there are multiple ways of doing this. I think in the case of Chinese, there may be some standard documentation which is available, but I think that's something we probably certainly should think about and discuss further. Thank you.
Edmund? Edmund? Can you hear me?
Edmund, we can't hear you.
You're
speaking.
Hello?
Now we can hear you. Yeah, please go ahead.
Please restart, Edmund, because we couldn't hear you.
Okay. Is it okay now?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, fine.
Okay. So in response to the script communities, I think, Matt, like you're right in terms of there are certain scripts or areas that there may be some ambiguity, but that is precisely where we can kind of draw the line in many cases, because where there is a more clear consensus from the SWIFT community, then there would be documented standards or documents that we can refer to, and such as in the case of, like, for example, Arabic, or for the case of Chinese. For those that do not, then you know, that is also a good indicator that it's not that is probably not supported. So I think that in itself can actually draw the line more clearly. So I don't yes, perhaps in terms of a strict understanding of the text or the statement that we might be putting together, there may be some ambiguity there. We can point to a few references to make it more clear, but I think where you're thinking perhaps some of the areas that are would be more problematic, that essentially means that, you know, there is no support for that at that point. So I think it's really not too bad there. And in terms of the question on, I guess, the burden, the issue of cost, I think, again, that is really the registry and the registrar agreement. But on the ICANN agreement side, which is only pertains the GTLDs, as we have indicated that a variants are registered as kind of an atomic, I forgot exactly how we eventually decided to describe it, but that already covers the issue, and also the ICANN agreement with new GTLDs views a registration as the primary registration. Variants are not identified as a registration, and therefore not a billable transaction, if you will. So by that, well, those cases that are already in, that shouldn't be a big issue. But I think there is a point there. I don't know whether we need to incorporate it here, but I think the key message perhaps is to treat a registration as the key point in terms of cost. So that has been how, from what I understand, that has been how domains have been registered based on registration as a billable transaction. But I could be wrong, and there could be future cases. So yes, I think that's something we probably need to point out.
Thank you, Ivan. Please mute. Yeah, thank you. This is Mark speaking. Two points here. First, about the documentation, etc. I think that we should then state something that a SWIFT community must have published, maybe even RFC. Informational is okay, but an RFC that documents that this SWIFT community or language community handles variants in this automatic way. So that is the first one. And the second one is on cost. And the registry agreements with the new GTLDs says that activation of variants must be done after request by the registrant. So it does not permit the automatic activation of variants. And secondly, as far as I understand, ICANN does charge extra for the variants. And the reason why they have this requirement of active activation is due to the cost. That's my picture. Edmund, please.
Yeah, I I kind of disagree with the view, but I don't think we need to get down to the legal details here. I think I disagree with the view, and in the negotiation of the new GTLD contract, this was specifically discussed multiple times and clarified as registration versus delegation. The registration is a billable transaction. Delegation, the DNS, that's for variance is a separate matter. But anyway, I don't think we need to get into legal of this particular item. But in terms of our recommendation, I think you know we can leave it at that. You know, the we can add a note that this is one of the considerations to be looked into.
Edmund, I can inform you that in pre-delegation testing, one of the test cases is to ensure that the variants are not automatically activated according to the policy stated by the registry. So this is how ICANN requires it as it is now. But we don't have to follow that as it is now, and we can propose what we think is reasonable. Okay, does Dennis and Satish have any comments on this? Then I think that we go to the next item. Before that, I want to ask Edmund to do an update on this text as we have discussed it today.
Yeah, that will be fine. I'll update it based on our discussion today.
Thank you. Okay. No comment from Dennis. I think that you agree with us then. The next is this text. Is this part of the Edmund text here? Samad, please.
This was suggested by Carl, I think it's
okay.
About those grandfathering of domain names, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
Dennis, just read.
Okay, let's. Yes, Dennis, please.
Yes, thank you, Matt. Sorry, I was talking to the mute phone and. Just wanted to comment back to the recommendation on variants. Just one remark that we should let registries what is the best business model as to the activation of variants, whether it is, I agree with the atomic concept that, or the bundle concept, if you will, that all variants should belong to the same registrant. Albeit we have to deal with grandfather names, but we should let registry operators decide what's the business model, whether they treat them as a billable transaction or not. That's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's go to the next item then. The text proposed by Carl, who is not with us. Let us take 1 minute and read through. Dennis, do you want to comment context? You'll raise your hand.
Ah, sorry, I left it from the other guy, but since I'm talking now, I think I mostly agree with what we're trying to convey here, and maybe this is not going to be the only section that these guidelines may impact legacy registrations. So we need to think about what were to best include these texts. And it may be overly prescriptive. Maybe it could be shortened a little bit, but really not sure how to do it. But I think that's my two cents.
Okay. Edmund, do you want to comment before you leave?
Hello.
Yes.
I have a very hard time reading it from the screen because I cannot find a way to zoom it. So I guess I'll have to depend on the mailing list to further respond. But based on previous discussion, I think on this topic, the general direction I'm okay with. I'll take a more detailed look into the text when I can get on. And my apologies, I'll probably be dropping off in a minute or so.
Okay. Have a good flight. I think you're on the airport. Okay. Satish, do you want to comment? Sarbat?
Right. So I'm just reading through this. I guess the way the language is written, I think it covers all the bases, but it does not require an action. It just recommends it. And one of the things we were talking about, or, you know, we're looking at this recommendation in the context of those cases where there are labels which are homoglyphs and already registered, so they potentially pose a security issue. I think in that context, maybe there should be some requirement, you know, at least define the relevant registrants or, you know, doing something at least. You know, reading through it initially seems like the language does not really require an action. That's just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Samad. This is Mark speaking. Yes, I have the same reaction as you have. I mean, they tell us what will happen if something happens, but does not require that something happen. And I'm not sure if we want to state that something must happen with already registered domain names, or if it's okay that they continue to live. I'm not sure. I guess there are pros and cons. Actively remove names could feel quite harsh. So, but we could raise that discussion later again. The text should have its own section, I think. Maybe some more text around it to state that this is valid for all the requirements in the guidelines. Okay, anyone else or any more comments? Let's scroll down then. Okay, this is recommendation 5 that has been reintroduced here. It says that all call points in a single label will be taken from the same script as determined by Unicode standard, etc. Exceptions are permissible for languages with established orthographies, etc. Well, one could, all code points from the same explicit Unicode script, I think it should say, because all IDN tables, almost all IDN tables permit digits combined with letters, and they actually come from different Unicode scripts. Anyone have any comments on this? Should we require that something is documented or something to allow for commingling?
Max, this is Ennis.
Yes. Yes, please.
So, could you elaborate on should we allow commingling? Are you suggesting we mix Latin and Cyrillic in the same label? That's actually very, very dangerous.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But it's very common to mix Latin in Han. Or hiragana and katakana.
Yeah.
So, and actually,
that is capturing the second part of the recommendation, right? It says exceptions to this kind are permissible for languages with established orthographies and conventions that require the commingling use of multiple scripts. So clearly, it refers to Chinese and Japanese and Korean, for that matter, where they can mix Latin with Han or Latin with Hangul. And in the case of Japanese, there are 4 scripts that they use in the Japanese language, Latin included.
Yes. There could be more cases where script mixings should be accepted. Technically, since letters and digits are not in the same, the European digits are common code points. They're not Latin code points. They're common code points. Technically, that's a different script too. So the text should be updated. Yes, please, Dennis.
I'm saying I don't think it needs a revision. I mean, I'll be happy to review what you suggest, but in the current form, I don't think there is any issues or imprecisions that we would need to fix. Where I don't see what I think you were trying to convey.
Okay, let me make a clear example. Swedish uses Latin characters for writing, okay? that it also uses digits in domain names. And digits are not Latin characters. They are common script codes. So in for writing Swedish domain names, you need both code points from Latin script and from common script. And this one states that all code points in a single label will be taken from the same script. And so this is imprecise. So I think that the text needs some revision. So Mud, please. Satish writes, maybe there's a case for explicitly stating the case of digits. Yes. I volunteer to update the text.
Sorry, this is Matt.
Samad.
Sorry, I was on mute. I just need to make a quick comment. So I think, first of all, to respond to what you just said about digits, the second clause, as Dennis also mentioned, does allow for exceptions, and I guess mixing digits with Latin would probably also be okay based on this second clause, which allows for exceptions. So that was just a quick thing. I wanted to actually discuss a bit more on the last sentence of this recommendation, which actually says that there are visually confusable characters from different scripts. They will not be allowed to coexist in a single set of permissible code points. There's some issues with that particular statement, at least, which I am not able to understand. First of all, I don't understand what it means, what is meant by coexist in a single set of permissible code points. Does that translate into a single IDN table, or does that translate into all the IDN tables within a single zone, or are we talking about just different code points within a single label? So I'm not really sure I understand that part. And then the second part is that, if you're really talking about that these scripts can be mixed and they can go into a single table, then there's still a possibility of these confusable characters to actually coexist in a single table. I think what we should probably say, and I think that's what we've been discussing in this next recommendation which we've been talking about, where we're saying that in such cases, when we talk about homoglyphs, they can coexist, but if they coexist, then they cannot be used to create labels which can go to different registrars. So they must either go to the same registrar or be blocked. So in a way, I think this last sentence to me sounds a little, at least I'm not able to clearly understand what it actually is meaning. And if I understand what it means, maybe it really needs to be changed in the context of the variant discussion and homoglyph discussion we are currently having. Thank you.
Thank you, Samad. This is Matt speaking. I agree with you. I think that the last sentence should be removed since it's covered by the discussion about homoglyphs. A comment on this recommendation. Labels don't necessarily belong to any language. You can have an IDN table which is script-based, So that there is no language orthography to base the decision that letters and digits are permitted. So if we write it like it is now, it means that script-based IDN tables cannot have any digits. So I still think that we should update this, that we talk about a single explicit Unicode script. I volunteer to write an update on this and send in for the next meeting. My suggestion is that we remove the last sentence then, too. Does anyone have any objections to my suggestion? Satish says agreed, so I think that we agree on the idea of recommendation 5. And I'll do an update and send in. Yes. Okay. Let's move down to the thing that I wrote and sent in yesterday. A fairly long text. Dennis has already sent in a comment on the mailing list. Please, Dennis, can you comment?
I'll be happy to, but I see Sarmat's hands up before me, so I'll let Sarmat go first.
Okay, Sarmat. Please.
Okay. So first, I would suggest, I think this is, we do need to build the background on this because this may not be readily understandable. So once we've actually developed all this, my suggestion would be to probably move the leading part into an appendix I think refer to it and then go directly into a recommendation just for better, I guess, readability. Otherwise, the document may become too long. That was something presented to a suggestion for all of you to consider. But I guess more substantively, we do, I think what Dennis was pointing out and also I think what we were aiming to do was that we had two separate recommendations or two separate items which we needed to address through harmonization. One was the cross-script homoglyphs, and then the second was having within script variants and capture those. And I think those may actually be two different recommendations. You know, the current one you've suggested focuses more on the cross-script variants and I think cross-script homoglyphs, I think. So the one on variants within the script is still missing, and I think we may want to add it as a later, you know, as a follow-up work. So that's just my initial comments. Thank you.
Well, the idea of what my text is to capture both of them, but I'm not sure about variants. Are we also talking about variants such as traditional versus simplified Han characters, or what kind of variants are we talking about? I thought we were only covering. Things that look the same.
Right, no. So variants, when we talk about variants within a script, they do not necessarily need to be homoglyphs. But since
the concept of variant itself basically says that if there are two variant labels, the SCIP community will consider those things to be the same. That's sort of the essence of what variants are. And so whether they are homoglyphs or not, variants, if they go to different registrants, will cause similar kind of issues as what we were talking about for homoglyphs, which are cross-script. And both of these things, I think, were separately pointed out in the meeting in Hyderabad as well. Again, yes, variants are not necessarily homoglyphic. Thank you.
So please, Dennis, I want to give you a chance to state your opinion.
Thanks, Matt. As I wrote on email yesterday, it's just trying to keep us focused on the two use cases that we agree on working on this topic, right? The harmonization of variants and just give an example is, let's say I have a two Arabic script language tables in my registry. So the harmonization of variants says that I should have the same variant rules in two or whatever number of Arabic language scripts I have in my registry so that variants are harmonized across the registry, right? So I'm preventing that in the case that I have variant rules for one Arabic language and then I have another set of rules Arabic language, but I don't harmonize the two of those, I may open opportunity to have variants go to different registrants, and that's what we want to prevent. And the second use case is, and please keep me honest, what we're trying to achieve is to prevent cases where there is a whole label that you can create with two different scripts, right? It's not about just blocking or preventing registration that contain just one homoglyph of a different script, because that will be taken care of by recommendation 5 or version 3, right? That doesn't allow a mingling of scripts. So there is no way that one homoglyph of a different script can be, for example, a Cyrillic, the Cyrillic A could be used in a Latin label. That way, that homoglyph is prohibited to be used in a different script. So what we're trying to address here is whole labels that can be registered, that can be constructed using a single script. And I put the example of the label scope. Those two labels can be constructed entirely in Cyrillic and entirely in Latin. So I'm looking for confirmation if that is specific, because I don't want to go beyond that, because otherwise it just gets, the scope is I think it's confused with other use cases. So I just want to clarify that those are the two use cases that we're trying to solve here.
Okay. The use case of homoglyphs, that is exactly the same use case as I'm trying to capture in my text. And if you misunderstood me, then my text was not good enough. I didn't see the entire variant scope here. But maybe it's good to include it here. This kind of, does this say then that it's required to have some variant management? Because in some cases, their code points within one script are almost homogeneous. And there are combinations that are homogeneous. Salmad extracted the ones that could be used in IDNA 2008, and there were a number of cases where there were, I'd say, homoglyphs within the script. So, should we require that those are handled, or the only is only that they are handled the same way in different IDN tables?
So Matt, this is Dennis, if I may. Although I see Sarmat's hands up, so.
Yeah, please. Please go ahead, Dennis.
Sarmat has his hands first.
Okay. Sarmat.
But I'll go after you, Dennis. No problem. Please go ahead.
I lost my train of thought.
Dennis, please.
What?
Okay, so then I guess I'll jump in. So I think probably an expectation would be that if things are truly homoglyphs, they would be defined as variants within a script. But if that's not the case, then I guess, Max, what you're saying is probably a good idea that we say that variants and any homoglyphs which are not variants should be included within the intra-script or within script analysis. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, is it should it be mandatory for a Han IDN table to include variant management of traditional versus simplified. Ahmad. Or Dennis.
I don't know if that's a must. I think it depends on, well, right now I'm talking right in the context of before reference tables. So back in the day when we didn't have any reference tables, at least the practice of Edison is to have script tables. If there are any language tables out there as a standard, like the ones developed for CJK and other number of languages, we will adopt those. But it's not Edison's intention to come up with a language table version on its own. So we will use whatever is available out there, and it's adopted by the community, right? The language community itself.
So VeriSign uses a script table of Han characters for new GTD.
No, we use script tables in absence of language tables. So in the case of Chinese, there is a language table for Chinese, so we'll use Chinese table, which includes Boolean rules, and we adopted those.
VeriSign uses a Han table with no variant rules. A pure Han table is available for...
No, I'm saying...
Well, that is what...
Matt.
Well, that is what VeriSign has submitted to PDT. It might be a Chinese table too, but they have submitted a Han table with no variant rules.
I doubt that.
Well, I know it. That is what VeriSign has submitted to PDT. I have tested those. I've inspected those. I have discussed those with VeriSign. We can take that offline, Dennis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there are also other new GTLDs with Chinese with no variants, just a Chinese table with Latin and Han and no variant rules at all. So those exist. So should these guidelines require that the variant rules are implemented? I think that we are running out of the time. Dennis, would you mind taking my text and making a suggestion?
Sure. Yes. So based on the definition of homoglyph and our taking a look to intentional.txt and keeping focus on the two use cases, I would draft some recommendations.
Yes, please. I mean, feel free to write the new text. It's something that you suggest instead of my text. You may keep as much as you want, and you may replace as much as you want. I think there could be a step forward. I think you have good views and suggestions, so I think that's good. Salman, please.
So just a couple of things before we discuss when we should meet next. Just one small thing. When we're revising this text, I think last time we discussed that we will refer to intentional.txt and the root zone LGR work as something which is a reference point, and obviously confusables is too large and too loose in our context. But we actually said that we will go beyond intentional.txt and also look at root zone. So that's one thing I just wanted to, point out. And then the second thing, and I think the motivation for that was that intentional was too strict, and too, it didn't cover any other scripts.
Too limited.
Right. The second thing I wanted to ask all of you about before closing was when would you like to come back and start our meetings next year, and whether you would like to keep a weekly schedule so that we can close this, or do you want to, or is this too stringent and you want to move back to a bi-weekly call or something, fortnightly call?
I suggest that we have our next meeting January 5, so that we skip next week between the Western Christmas and the Western New Year, and then that we have meeting January 5, and then that we keep a weekly schedule, because I think that we get better progress in discussion and in work with weekly schedule. Dennis and Satish, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm okay with resuming in first week of January, and I have no objection on the weekly base.
So, Mud, is that fine for you too?
Yes, I think I would probably even prefer or suggest that to the group that we move to a weekly schedule and see if we can possibly close a version and have it out before I can 58 for discussion with the community.
Okay.
So I think obviously weekly schedule would be great.
So the homework for next week, Samad, have you taken that down?
Right, so I'll minute that and circulate it. So I'll send in everybody's action items.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, all of you, and have good holidays, all of you, if you have, or good work if you don't have a holiday. And
likewise.
Talk to you January 5th.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good holiday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.